the loud sound, it seemed to fade. Came back like a slow voice on a wave of fate. That weren't no DJ, that was hazy cosmic time.
Ed Keenan in for Alex Pearson. Look into the stars. Today, in the next few minutes, I'm looking at a story, actually, in the Star, not the Stars, the Toronto Star, where I work in my day job, and where my a colleague, Kevin Zhang, wrote this week about an 11-year-old artist who says, you know, in the near future, if there's an apocalypse, his work will still be there. And what he's talking about, even if the earth is destroyed, his work will live on. And that's because his work is headed to the moon. And that's courtesy of my next guest, who is a semi-retired physicist, a prolific author and art collector, and the founder of the Lunar Codex, Dr. Samuel Peralta. Welcome to the program, Doctor.
Good morning, Ed. Sam is fine. And thanks to 640 Toronto for bringing me on.
Oh, I, it is absolutely our pleasure. So, I mean, I sort of teased it there, but I didn't tell people what it's all about. But the project is essentially that you are in about to send 30,000 works of art to the moon.
Well, essentially, that's it. It's more than 30,000 works of art. We've got 30,000 creative artists, writers, musicians, and filmmakers. Some of them have got one piece of art. Other people have a dozen, so it will work out to about 2 to 3 pieces of art on average per person. So we're looking at something more on the order of about 50,000 pieces of art right now that we're launching to the moon.
I'm sure. I'm sure that a lot of people listening to that are trying to imagine the building size container you would need to contain 50,000 works of art, but that's not exactly what's happening, right?
No, we're not sending an Amazon truck full of books or art to the moon. That would be horrendously expensive. First of all, it costs $1 million to get a ticket on one of SpaceX's rockets, and you know I don't have that chains in my sofa.
Wish I had it to lend you.
I wish too, but how we're doing it actually is we're taking those pieces of art and the books and the music, and we're doing one of two things. Number one, we're either saving them on memory cards, similar to the ones that are used by NASA on their rockets. They'll be shielded from radiation and so on and so forth. And I don't have just ordinary memory cards. I've got 1 terabyte memory cards, and we're negotiating for 2 terabytes. That's a lot of memory. You can put lots of film on there and so on and so forth. But the really neat thing that we're doing actually is for the art and the books, we're miniaturizing them. You've heard of microfiche, right?
Yeah.
When we were younger, they'd use that to put in libraries so they didn't have the full book. You'd basically miniaturize books onto film that would be microscopic size. Well, we're doing much the same thing, except we're doing the next step. We're putting them on nanofiche. Not a lot of people have heard of this, but what we're doing is we're laser etching images of the art and the books onto a little piece the size of a quarter or a dime. So in the end, what I'm sending to the moon is essentially a stack of memory cards and dimes. That's about the size of my thumb, if you like. And we're doing that on 3 rocket launches. And that's essentially what we're doing.
Now
you can actually see these, you can actually read the books with a microscope.
that's what I was going to say. I mean, the memory cards, obviously, you need some sort of computer hardware to put them in. But the nanofiche, like a microfiche, that's actually visible, I was going to say with the human eye, but under magnification, it's actually there, right? You'd be able to view it under a microscope, as you say.
That's right. Actually, if we do it on gold, and I've got samples of these as well, the gold shows up to the human eye. You can actually read it with a magnifying glass. So with a 100, wow, 1,000 times magnifying glass, the books can actually be read.
So,
but if you put it on nickel, you do need a microscope.
If you need to fundraise for the Amazon truck, perhaps those as a commemorative coin set that you could sell to collectors. Before we get on, I did want to, one other practical element of this is that you're sending this in three shipments in the upcoming future, and this becomes possible because there's space available now on commercial flights to the moon.
You've got it right. It used to be that NASA was the only way to get to the moon. But that changed when NASA decided to outsource its rockets, for example, to SpaceX and to Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin. Mm. So NASA is getting out of the business. It's not fully out of the business yet, but it's out of the business of making rockets. It's up to SpaceX to do that. But what most people don't know is it's getting out of the business of making lunar landers. The Apollo missions were all manufactured by NASA with subcontractors and so on and so forth. But right now, they're delegating that responsibility to companies like Astrobotic out in Pittsburgh, or Intuitive Machines in Texas, or Firefly. So there's a whole handful of folks who make these lunar landers right now. So because they are commercial, they don't just have space available for NASA, although NASA is their biggest customer. Mm-hmm. They've got space for scientific institutions and people like me.
Yeah, and thank goodness for that. Now, you know, we've talked a little bit about the practical element of this, like how you put it onto a like how you actually transport the works of art, what physical form they take, how they get to the moon, how you buy space on that. But the behind all that, of course, is the first, like the dream, the motivation. Why did it occur to you, and how that this is something you wanted to do, to send art from Earth to live up there on the moon?
Well, when I got the opportunity to send, you know, payloads up, personally, the first thing I thought, obviously, were, gosh, I'm going to send up my own books and my own art, right? I'm an anthologist, which means that the books that I publish under my small press, Windrift Books, are actually collections of short stories. I've got about 25 of them, and each one of them have about a dozen authors each. So when I put my anthologies on board, that's not just me, that's like hundreds of authors, right? And when I told them about this, they were just so overjoyed. The next step would be that I'm also a curator of art, because I'm an art collector and I love art. I've got relationships with galleries, so they've asked me to curate some exhibitions, some of which have exhibition catalogs. So I've got a couple of them which have catalogs which have maybe 2 dozen artists in them, 3 dozen artists in them. So obviously the first thought I had was, I'm going to put those catalogs up. Hmm. They're the catalogs that I did. And so it snowballed from there, right? The joy that I had in being able to put my works on a capsule headed to the moon, I was able to spread to other artists and writers who at the time, early 2021 sort of thing, were precluded from practicing their art because of the lockdowns.
Yeah. So now, Sam, we're almost out of time, but I just wanted to say, so when you originally had the idea to send up some of your own work and then expanded it and it snowballed, as you said, who do you have in mind? Is it some future moon landing by a future Earth civilization, or is it a time capsule for you know, your grandchildren to find, or is it some alien species encountering the moon at some point in the future? Who's the intended audience for this work on the moon?
It's really all of the above. It's a time capsule to the future, but really the intended audience is artists down here on Earth. Really, it's to imbue the moon with a sort of human soul. Not only do we have the writers and poets have been inspired by the moon for centuries, but now this is the first generation to be able to look up at the moon and know that there is some of our own art that is up on the moon. And it conveys a sort of immortality to the artists and writers and musicians and filmmakers who've been included in this. They know that despite wars and famine and economic upheaval here down on Earth, their art will live on.
All right. Dr. Samuel Peralta, I love that image, and I thank you so much for it. Good luck with this project.
Thanks for having me, and good afternoon.
All right. Good late morning, afternoon to you. Last night, there's two super moons this month. The moon is close, and my daughter, 11-year-old daughter, came right before bed and said, wasn't there supposed to be some kind of special moon tonight? And it's the Sturgeon super moon. We had just read about it. So we went out and looked at it big and low in the sky, and it looked beautiful. And I think, in a couple months when I go and look out at the moon, I'll be thinking of Sam's project there, because that is kind of an evocative image.